Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Elaine Magliero, debut picture book author and poet of Things to Do. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 325 of the podcast with Elaine Magliero. Elaine spent a career teaching elementary school children, and in so many years they taught her a number of things as well. In Things to Do, Elaine's poetry celebrates the day, the time outside, the will of nature, and the magnitude of wonder present in things great and small. Confession, I am in love with Elaine's poems. They are so fun to read, so playful and energetic, and at times halting. Let's learn about Elaine's approach to crafting such a beautiful book. Here's episode number 325 of the podcast with Elaine Magliero. Welcome to the podcast, Elaine Magliero. I'm excited to talk to you tonight about Things to Do.
And I'm excited to talk to you about Things to Do.
I love saying your book title that way because it just sounds like we're just making plans for the weekend.
My plans for the weekend to rest after spending the week taking care of my grandchildren.
I hear that. Mine is to rest just after spending the week with kids at school. So we're not so different. Well, Elaine, I'm so grateful, as I was saying, to be able to have a chance to talk to you because of this beautiful, beautiful picture book that I know is your debut, but I want to say off the bat, reads like someone who has worked her entire life around literature, around poetry, around words. The way that you phrase things in this book is so beautiful, and just the way the text just dances is really, it's a really beautiful thing you've done here, Elaine.
Oh, thank you. It's so good to hear that, because so many people don't have a real appreciation for poetry. And that has been one of the passions of my life. And I have spent my life around children's literature as an elementary teacher, as a school librarian, as an instructor of children's literature at Boston University for several years. And poetry has been a mainstay for me, and it's helped me get through a lot of tough times in my life. And that's why I believe that it's important to introduce poetry to children by all different children's poets on all different subjects so that they can develop appreciation for it. And maybe some of them will get hooked on it the way I did.
So when did you get hooked on poetry? Because the way that, I mean, I'm with you. I love poetry. I love when poets can craft art the way they do in words, the way that we can feel sometimes more things and different, feel differently and see differently through poetic text than we can in nearly any other way. So to have that sort of ingrained in you, when did you first, you know, find that attraction to poetry?
I'd say it was when I was in my mid-20s and I was teaching. I had a great instructor of children's literature at Salem State College, now Salem State University. She got me hooked on children's literature and children's poetry. And the way I was taught to teach was through integrated units. So if you were teaching science or social studies, you would try to incorporate literature and other things into it.
Yes.
And then I started using poetry with my units in the classroom. And in the early 80s, I met David McCord. He was the first children's poet to win the National Council of Teachers of English Award for Excellence in Poetry for Children. And I met him at a Boston Globe Book Festival. I asked him to come to my school. After that time, he visited my classroom every year. He became my mentor. He'd critique my work and tell me when things weren't good enough. I had a teaching colleague I was very friendly with, and she started me collecting poetry books. She gave me the Random House book of poetry for children that was edited by Jack Paluzzi, and a book by Shel Silverstein. And then I bought all the books. I got so hooked. I have thousands of children's poetry books.
Do you?
Oh, yes. That's Whoa. Why I don't have too much money in my elder years. But it's wonderful to have something. Even my husband said he wished he had something that he was that passionate about.
Yeah.
Because it's just wonderful. And when I'm writing poetry, it's wonderful to be able to get something out of your head and create something that's unique to you. And I hope my voice came through in this book.
When
I began writing, it was mostly shorter, light verse, humorous verse. And it developed over the years because David McCord introduced me to people like John Ciardi and Myra Conn Livingston and Carla Kuskin. And then I began reading a lot of books on how to introduce children to poetry. And all of Myra Conn Livingston's book in particular, which became my Bible for teaching children how to write poetry, was her book, Poem Making, Ways to Begin Writing Poetry. And it introduced me to my favorite kind of poem, which is a mask poem.
A mask poem. M-A-S-K?
Yes, or a persona poem. That's where I have a couple of those collections and they get rejected. But that doesn't stop me from writing them. And it was wonderful with my students in the classroom. So whatever we studied about, when they got knowledge of it, they could pretend to be the sun or the moon or a tree or a cat or a panda or anything. And they could speak in that animal's voice or that object in nature's voice. And another book I'd recommend, if you can get it, it's out of print, which in addition to Myra's book was Carla Kuskin's book, Any Me I Want to Be. And that is a book of mask poems, animals talking and a sled talking and all those things. And they're just such fun. And it's a great way to introduce children to writing poetry.
Oh, I love that. To be able to place yourself in the body of that person or object, that makes, yeah, that personifying act, that's beautiful. I can see that. Well, I love the way that has just the studying poetry, reading all types of poetry, has brought that expression out in you. In your book, it's a collection of poems, but I like the way that it's organized sort of throughout the course of a day. It feels like we go from the intimate inside the house out into the big world, and it is brought back into the intimate closeness of the fireflies and the crickets and the moon. I just feel like there's something there to the arc of the collection that works beautifully.
I have to thank Grace Lynn for that.
Grace. Oh,
I have
I was
had
so hoping we were going to talk about Grace.
two great advisors, Janet Wong, who's an award-winning poet, and
Oh
she's
my
written two
word.
books of
How
fiction.
you run with
And
quite a
anytime I
crowd.
need help, I can call her or email her, and she'll get back to me ASAP and critique my work. And she tells me the truth if she likes it and if she doesn't like it. But Grace was the one. I had sent out a collection to an editor Janet recommended, and she liked some of the poems in my things to do, but they kind of hopped all over the place. And there was no what they call hook for the book. So Grace went through it and she said, you know, why don't you take it through a day? You've got, the poem about dawn and the poem about night and the poem about moon. And so I did that. And I thought that was a good idea. And then I said, well, maybe it'll be more sellable if I put in poems about school. So I had a poem, Things to Do If You're a Bus, and Things to Do If You're, school lunch, and Things to Do If You're a spelling test. Don't make me queasy, be easy. And so I sent it on to, oh no, I didn't send it on. Grace sent it to Melissa Manlove, my editor at Chronicle, without my knowing it.
Without you knowing
So
it.
she said she had been with Melissa and she said, I have a collection by a friend I'd like you to see. Now, Grace and I had planned to collaborate on a book of poems about candy. And I wrote a whole collection, but candy and sugar is not too popular these days. So she decided to send her the things to do. And Melissa really liked it. So she contacted me and she said, I really like this, but can we take all the school poems out?
Oh, you t I love that.
Except she really liked the scissors poem
And
and
the
the eraser
erasers.
poem.
Yes, the eraser poem is so good.
So they stayed in. And then another thing was that Melissa wanted there to be a problem. So it was like a story with an arc. And one of the books she recommended I read was All the World by Liz Garten Scanlon. She said something
Yes.
like that, where there's, I don't know the lines in it, but most of the different stanzas are all happy. But then, you have rainfall and things happen. So I try to think what could be the problem? Because the original conceit was to have a little girl go for a picnic with her mom to the park. And she'd do all these things and see all these things. And then I thought about getting her dog getting lost, and that seemed too fraught, too much. So then we thought about her taking her teddy bear and leaving it there and it getting caught in the rain and having to clean it off. And no matter how much I tried to write poems about that, it didn't work out. So I said to Melissa, why not just make the rainstorm be the problem?
I mean, you have the whole celebration of being outside, so it makes perfect sense for the rain to drive you in. But man, that poem about the sky, do you mind if I read it
Oh, I'd love
to
if you did.
Oh, it is my favorite. Not only, I mean, I know we will take a moment to talk about Katya Chen's beautiful art in this. I mean, it's my word. This book is a work of art, without a
Yes,
doubt.
it is.
So this poem is called Things to Do If You Are the Sky. It says, Things to Do If You Are the Sky. Stay clear and blue. Let the sun smile down. Don't grow grumpy, gray, and frown. Don't scramble storm clouds. Don't grumble and complain. Don't stab the ground with lightning. Don't rain. Don't rain. And the cloud, when your eyes go from the right side of that spread to the left side of the spread to the right, you see the child flying her kite, and you just see how dark the clouds get.
And how windy.
How windy. There's a great motion to the illustrations there that really pulls with the words. It's nice.
Well, I should tell you, it took Chronicle more than a year to find an illustrator.
So they bought your manuscript. So Grace shared the manuscript, and Melissa was
They bought it
interested.
in October of 2011. That's how long it took.
Now, when you say to find an illustrator, does that mean like
How much of the process are you allowed to share? Like, were they trying out other illustrators and it didn't feel like it fit?
No, they turned it down. Some were busy and some didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
But Melissa let me have some say.
Oh, cool.
So after it was almost a year, she said, don't get discouraged. We'll find the perfect illustrator. And she sent me the names of four illustrators, and she told me to look at their work. Well, I looked at Katia's work.
Oh, you saw a boy in a jaguar?
I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, because I've never met her. But I said, oh, yes.
Yeah, that book.
And
yeah, she's...
What I think I wrote to you an email is that it's perfect in my mind for what I wrote in my mind is that... And it's something, it's a way that both Grace and Melissa described it. It's dreamy. And I see myself as the child in the book. I was like that. You know, I'd watch ants crawling in and out of anthills and grasshoppers bounding through the grass and come home with all kinds of rocks in my pockets. And I see it as a child and in living in her imagination.
Yes, I love that. The way Katia paints these illustrations is that everything is soft. The edges, the lines, there's no hard lines. They're all just blurred and soft. And you get especially the, there's two spreads back to back that just show a different perspective that pulls on a closeness to the object. And that's the things to do if you're a snail, where we see the girl ducked down to the level of a snail and just surrounded or framed by these leaves, and you're just up close with her eyes and the snail not even on full page, just halfway onto
right.
the page, creeping on, and then to turn that page, and how staggering the things to do if you're the sun, that you're just, we're sort of behind the child and her dog looking up at this kite, but we're just staring into the sun, so the whole page is basked in oranges and yellows. Just, I mean, it halted me. That illustration was powerful, and I think that Katia, page after page, does that. I think that her control of color and composition both are just, they're masterful, and they...
And the as you mentioned, yeah. The changes in perspective.
Yes. And they complement your poems are going through that too. You're going from big to small to, the sky and the sun and the rain down to an eraser and to scissors. And so that, to have, I mean, the easiest way for me to talk about it is the way the camera in the book, that supposed camera that's zooming in and zooming out, you just, your words and her art allow us to see so many different perspectives of this child's day, and in that way convey so many different emotions in her day that it's really, yeah, it's, I feel like, impossible not to feel when reading this book. You just feel a lot.
Well, I hope so. And one thing as a teacher, you notice in more modern times is that children don't always have the same connection, at least that I did when I was a child, and I'm 70 now. And I think that's sad. And that's why one of the most important things for me as a teacher was taking kids outdoors for a walk in the woods and things like that, for them to really experience feeling the barks of trees and looking under rotting logs and finding salamanders and making them open to their environment around them, and you hope they develop an appreciation for it and maybe more of a wonder in science that's all around them.
Yes, that importance of going outside and exploring and feeling connected, not just to one another, but to the wind blowing and the earth beneath their feet, is something so important. And so to have, I mean, I feel like this is the teacher in you, but it's also you calling out the wonder to your readers, but being able to ask them things like, what are the things that you do when you're a pair of boots, or that when you are an eraser, or that when you're a snail, or when you're the moon, or that when you're an acorn, the way that poem, to have that cover illustration, reappear into the book when you realize that you are that acorn falling. That wonderful picture of the girl just.
Oh, I love that. And that
oh
was
my
one of the
gosh.
ones that Katia had to change from her original sketch. The original one of that one was the one she changed. Most of the other ones stayed the same. And I'm very happy because it shows the exuberance of a child at play.
Well, I read this and immediately can't help. I feel like poetry is one of the strongest forms of writing that call other writers to join in. And so in this collection of poems that you have, I feel like it's beckoning for us to look at those things around us and wonder what it is to spend a day as a snail and what you're up to, or spend the day as your eraser or your pencil or what have you. And so I love that in that way, you've left room for the reader here. You've left room for not only what their minds will wonder, but then also what they will go make after reading this.
And I have to give credit to Bobby Katz, because I got the idea for this years ago, more than 20 years ago. I was reading Paul Genesco's book, Poetry from A to Z. It was Ideas for Writing Poetry. And for Ellie, I'd list poem, and there was a poem in there by her about things to do if you're the rain. And it jogged my memory, and I had a book that she had written. I think it's called Inside Down and Upside Down and Inside Out. And in it, she had six things to do poems. I think it was things to do if you're Subway and things to do if you're a pizza. And I thought to myself, you know, that might be a good idea to try with my students in school. So we wrote some collaborative poems together, and then they tried them themselves when they were writing about animals that they had researched or writing about the sun or the moon. And so she's the one who was my inspiration for this particular type of poetry.
Wow. 20 years this book was in that sort of way, from an idea, 20 years in the works. That's to have been, I mean, it gives me chills to think that the way that you absorbing that work and using that work with your own children to make your own students to make something new, and then leading it down the road to creating this. I mean, I can just see the cycle going around and around.
Well, it's actually that their poems were so good, they inspired me. I said, well, gee, I should be able to do this too.
Oh, cool.
and I found, even though I wasn't sending manuscripts out for a number of years, because a lot of my creative juices went into helping my students write poetry, because I found as a teacher, one of the best ways, or maybe the best way, to teach children how to write is to teach them how to write poetry. And I got them to focus, as in this book, is using the right kind of verbs, or what kids might call action words, and focusing on strong language and getting rid of words you don't need. And in addition, it's a smaller piece of writing than something that has several paragraphs. So you could really get them to look at their work. And as I helped them to do that, I became better at editing and revising my own work.
How long, when Elaine, did you feel the call to write for children? Has that something that's always been in your mind? I mean, because for me, I started off in the classroom. You said you taught elementary. Was there a particular grade that you taught, or
second and third, sometimes together?
Yeah. So, I mean, I likewise loved those experiences I had writing with my students and working with them to edit and to craft. And then when I went into the library, and I remain there now, I continue to have that experience. But there was a point where, after reading aloud so many books and doing this craft and seeing what they were creating, where like you, I too felt like, why aren't I writing stories? I'm having them write stories. Why? I mean, you go through so many years of, well, let's brainstorm something together, where you just feel like, what? I think I need to do this. So for you, that point hit, right?
Well, What happened was when I was in fifth grade, I began writing, but not poetry. I wrote a lot of funny things, you know, plays in high school. I wrote a parody of Oedipus Rex and did skits for school plays. And what I really wanted to be was a comedy writer. But those were different days. I went to the School of Education, the only college nearby that I could afford to go to because I come from an immigrant family. And I found, once I became a teacher and got hooked on poetry, soon after I got hooked on it, I began writing it. And I'd often share what I did with my students, and I'd share the different revisions I'd do, all the different drafts, and they could see that you didn't have to be right. It didn't have to be perfect the first time around.
Yes. Yeah. To be able to, I mean, I feel like you were doing author visits before you were a published author. That's amazing.
In a way, I guess, because I do have a lot of other collections that I've written.
Yeah.
Some of which I have never sent out and some of which have been rejected. So.
Well, to go through that though, for the children to see how the process is not that we sit, we write something, and then we're done. Or maybe we edit it one time. But that you can go through multiple edits, and sometimes it takes walking away from something and coming back to it. Or
oh, definitely.
Things like that for you. Yeah. I mean, you're firsthand demonstrating that to the children, which is something that I've actually brought up a lot of times in conversations like these, that I just don't feel like we have time in education to do that now. To say, hey, listen, you're going to write something, and we're going to put it away for a month and come back to it, and it'll be okay because we're going to keep working on it.
Well, one of the reasons I retired from the classroom in 2000 was because of school reform and this push for standardized tests. So I spent my I love being a classroom teacher, but I was able to spend my last 3 years in the library, and oh boy, did I love that even more. As I said to my assistant librarian, now I get to spend other people's money to buy books.
The one time in your life where buying books wasn't cutting into your retirement.
That's right. And I still got to read them.
I love that. Did you, were you also one? I mean, when I opened my first library, from what one of my professors in library school had suggested, I set about trying to read every single everybody book in my collection. And it was a pretty sizable collection, so I didn't get too far. But I felt like that opportunity to know what children were taking off the shelves and to know just what exists. I mean, the knowledge and the years of experience in storytelling that exist in a library are just something that it's magical. Libraries are magical places.
Oh, and you try to make them even more magical for children.
Yes.
And for kids who might be non-readers.
Yes.
You know, you try to find just the perfect book for them. That's why it is good to know. But I tried to read all the picture books I bought for the library. I couldn't read all the novels, but since my school at that time only went up to grade 4, it wasn't so tough. I'd read as many as I could.
Oh, see, all of this, I love that you've spent your life reading and your life writing, and that
and it only took a gazillion years to get
this. Well, for me, I was going to say, for all of that, that it is such a sweet reward to work with children, and it's such a beautiful thing to raise readers. But for me, there's something so enticing and magical at the thought that one day something I write might be able to be taken home by a child, because I know what hallowed ground we walk in the library when we librarians hand children books and they take them home and they love them. And Elaine, you're there. You have a book. And the kids
finally
can take it home. That's a thing.
Next Tuesday, what is it? Is that the 7th?
This goes live, it'll be out. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I have had several poems published in anthologies, including 1 Minute Till Bedtime. That's gotten many starred reviews.
Oh, that's right. I'll have to link to that. I love that. That was a wonderful collection. Well, yeah, the poetry, I feel like, is such a funny thing, because I feel like, I mean, the sentiment you shared earlier resonates with me. The best way to teach kids how to write, in your experience, was by just writing poetry with them. That's a good place to start, because of the editing and the playful words and the way that wordplay fancies into writing. But yet I feel like our poetry section is sort of like a misunderstood section by many people in the building.
Well, I think that's because a lot of people didn't have a good experience with it. And I got this feedback from a lot of my students at Boston University.
Okay.
You know, I think a lot of them get nursery rhymes and Dr. Seuss, and then they don't get a whole lot after that till they get to high school and they're expected to, you know, read the works of John Donne and things like that. Mm. And they don't have that background in poetry. But also I found that enthusiasm is infectious.
Oh, yeah.
And that children will usually come to value the things that the important lives, the significant adults in their lives value. And so poetry was a part of my classroom every day. And, you know, if you want to introduce children to poetry, all you have to do is spend a few minutes a day. A couple of poems a day is all it takes for them to have had, you know, a few hundred poems by the end of the year.
That's right. It doesn't take much at all. And sometimes it is, what connects with a child? I mean, it's with any book, with any reader, actually. But that what poem will connect with a child to make them really feel that connection sometimes takes reading 100 poems. But boy, when you hit it, that's like when that pitchfork rings out, where you just know you're matching the tone there.
Right, and you connect it to everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Weather around them, the holidays, you know, the sun, the moon, the weather. If you're teaching something in science, if you're teaching something in social studies.
Yeah.
You can, and of course, we have great anthologists like Lee Bennett Hopkins, who has produced so many poetry anthologies on various and sundry topics that there's something for everyone.
Yeah. Well, what a great time for these readers to be falling in love with poetry, that we have so many beautiful and well recognized novels in verse for them. We have these wonderful poets, and also the way that picture books quite often read as poetry themselves, that maybe we are, and you are, playing a hand in our next generation of poets.
Well, I would like to think that.
I certainly think so. Elaine, I want to honor our time, but I want to say one more time that your book, Things to Do, your and Katya's book, is gorgeous. I love it, and it will most certainly be a book that I'm talking about all year long, not just in April when we celebrate Poetry Month and Poem in Your Pocket and all of those wonderful things. And don't you, by the way, love that National Poetry Month is also the same month as National Library Month? I always love that.
Well, it is good, but I wish they would read poetry all through
all
year.
Yep.
And I'll tell you a little secret. I wrote a follow-up, and it's about winter poems, Things to Do Winter Poems. But we have to see how well this book does.
All right, people. That means that
poetry
that
is not a big seller.
That means it's on us. Oh, yeah, but the best thing about, well, see, you have to hook the librarians, I feel. But you can,
yes,
because there's beautiful work there. I mean, I feel like the first time I read a Douglas Florian a poetry book, one of his picture books, I just was hooked forever. That was back in library school, and I was like, oh, this is a person that will always be on my library shelves, no matter what library I'm working in. And you just find things like that. And
he was one of my students' favorites.
Yeah.
Especially Daddy Long Legs.
Oh, Daddy Long Legs.
Oh,
yes.
Daddy, yo. I once had a student who modeled that, modeled a poem for his father on that one. Oh, Daddy, Daddy, yo, you're the best dad I know, tall and thin.
Oh.
Went on like that.
My goodness. Elaine, I could talk to you for hours. I love this. Thank you. Thank you for being an advocate for poetry and, more importantly, for making something so beautiful for our readers. You've done beautiful work, and I for one, can't wait to see your work connect with readers that you haven't met yet. You've had all this experience with the readers that you have met, and now it's your turn to have readers come to you. This is going to be a special thing. So thank you again for taking time tonight to talk to me. I truly appreciate it.
And it's nice to have a fan of my work. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that.
Mm. I will be, I need to buy multiple copies so that I can like rip out the spreads and frame them all over my, it's one of those books. Those books only come once or twice a year for me, but this is one where I'm like, oh my gosh, I need.
I know, I'm fortunate that I got such a talented artist to illustrate my book.
Yeah. Oy, we're all fortunate. This is such a wonderful thing. Elaine, I'm gonna leave you by with all of my praise out in the air for you, but also with your last words to your readers. And so let me frame it this way. I will see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message can I bring to them from you?
Well, first of all, I'd like to encourage them to try reading some poetry. There's all kind of poetry for all kinds of children, and they might find they like it more than they think they do. Because I feel that way. My granddaughter, when I say poetry, she kind of rolls her eyes. She's 5 years old. But when I take her for walks or something and I recite it to her, she loves it. So I think I can say it to the children, but I think we need adults to help to introduce them to it, because they're not going to go and except with exceptional students maybe, go to the poetry section of the library and pick a book. So I'd say it to the librarians and the teachers as well as to the children. Try it. You may find you like it. And there are so many wonderful poets out there.
Hi everybody, Matthew here, jumping in really quick to share that before Elaine left, she had a poem she wanted to share with all of our readers and your children. So I want to say quickly thanks for listening. I can't wait to have you join me next time, but for now, please enjoy this special bonus poem from Elaine.
I'll give them a poem and I'll email it to you. It's a Things to Do poem, and it's about writing. And it is my first Things to Do poem that was published in Georgia Heard's book, Falling Down the Page, a book of list poems. Things to do if you're a pencil. Be sharp. Wear a slick yellow suit and a pink top hat. Tap your toes on the tabletop. Listen for the right rhythm, then dance a poem across the page.
Coming up on the podcast, Jessie Seema shares Not Quite Narwhal, her debut picture book. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's Koko Sleep, and I'll see you there.